This week on Art in the Air, we feature the music from the highly acclaimed violinist and Michigan City Chamber Festival organizer, Nick Obrovich. Next, we feature the subtle guitar stylings of Paul Schreiner from his new 30-track CD, Couch Music. Our spotlight is on Memorial Opera House's February production of Matilda the Musical with its director, Michael Glorioso.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air, our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's Breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. And we'd like to welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight. It's from the Memorial Opera House with their new upcoming production, Matilda the Musical. And we have the director and choreographer, Mike Glorioso and Andy Glorioso. And they're going to tell us about the show opening February 11th, running through the 27th. Both of you, welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Yeah, huge welcome. Hello.
Yes, thank you for having both of us. We're excited to be here and talk a little bit about the show.
Well, tell us a little bit about it. I know from just doing the background material, and you know, I'm not having musical theater background, I'm not familiar with this musical, although I decided in preparation I did download the album to listen to it. But I guess this is based on a character in Britain. Tell us a little bit about that and the development of it, first of all, and we'll go with you, Mike.
Well, it is based on Matilda of the same title by Roald Dahl, the guy who did James the Giant Peach, Charlie the Chocolate Factory, BFG, Witches, those books. And it basically tells a story of this brilliant young girl who gets born basically into this wrong family. And she's very, very smart, and her parents and brother are very, very dumb, and they don't really want her. So she goes to school, and she, through like her own imagination and other things like that, she kind of creates this whole new world, and that she doesn't realize that it's actually the story of her teacher that she ends up really bonding with throughout the whole process of the show. And it's basically kind of about, you know, those people who you know, those kids that are very unique and individuals. They kind of excel in their own way and find their own tribe. And that's what she does throughout the show. She kind of finds her tribe of students that she relates with at the school. She finds her teacher who she really bonds with.
And how could you not with a teacher named Miss Honey? I mean,
yeah,
really.
Yeah. So it's a touching story. The music was, you know, we did a little bit of research before we did it too. And apparently it was developed from the Shakespeare,
Royal Shakespeare Company, yeah.
Royal Shakespeare Company developed the show originally as like a way to kind of figure out how they can make more money and get more name recognition out there as well. And it's kind of brilliant to see the show kind of translate into that. It's very British at times, so I will say that as well. But it's a wonderful show, great music, very fast music, which creates a lot of interesting things to do as well.
One thing I read about the development, just background, is that they made sure they had the entire script book done for the show first, because they were talking about that because of the nature of the character, Matilda, she wasn't going to sing. And they said, well, you have to have your protagonist sing. And so that was a whole discussion early on in that. So in approaching the show, you know, since it's kind of new and different, and is this like the Northwest Indiana premiere also? But tell us a little bit about how you approach it as a director, and then we'll move on to choreography.
It has been done a lot. We'll say that the high school recently did it. I know that Wagon Wheel has done it. It's been done in the area several times, but it's something that, you know, each director, each production is a bit different. We're breaking from the British tradition of having everyone having English accents. Only a few characters have English accents. Some people have German accents. Some people have like a Southern twang. So it's kind of like we're creating this image of this could be anywhere in the world.
Yeah,
it's just kind of its own little area, make-believe land of wherever it's located. But keeping some of those British things in there as well. But it's kind of, as we developed the show, it was definitely seeing that and trying to figure out how to also relate the book piece of it along with everything else. Because books are incorporated and letters and numbers and everything is incorporated into the entire set, and also some of the numbers that are throughout the show as well.
So Andy, tell us a little bit about how you approach this for choreography for a show. And a little bit about the cast.
Oh, the cast is great. We've got 11 children in the cast, and they are amazing. I have not gone easy with them with the choreography, so but they're taking to it, and it's great.
What is their age range?
I think our youngest is
six, I believe, six or seven.
Seven, maybe, and then our oldest. Child, anyway, I think is 13. We do have some high school age children in the cast as well, but they're playing more of the adult roles. I listened to the cast recording, and I draw inspirations from other musicals. Chorus line, there's some Easter eggs in there. There's also a big, huge Latin dance number in there. So lots of different types of styles of dance. It's going to be a fun show.
And how's rehearsals been going? Because you're coming up on your opening pretty soon. So you're in what I call almost production week pretty soon. That's the week or so before that, before you get into tech week. So how are they going?
Going good. We're running and the best we can. Obviously we're keeping everyone safe too. We're still in the midst of a pandemic. So we're keeping everyone safe, social distance, hand sanitizer, washing the hands, especially masks. With masks. With the kids, definitely, it's like making sure it's like, okay, did you wash your hands? Did you hand sanitize? Keep the mask above your nose. I know it's difficult. You're dancing and singing, but we have to make sure to keep everyone safe. So, and they've been doing really great with it, and no real, happening throughout the process.
Well, we just got maybe about a minute or so left. Tell us maybe some of the obstacles you had, and then let's also hit like the show dates, location, tickets, and information like that.
Oh, of course. Not many major obstacles throughout this. Obviously, you know, again, we're living in a new normal with COVID. So those obstacles that are on everybody, and then also, you know, it is the winter, so we are running into, you know, the snow being on the ground and other things like that that kind of affect rehearsals sometimes more than they need to. But they've been going good, and we're ready to open. Like we open on February 11th. We run to the 27th. People can get their tickets right now, and they are going very fast. I went on there the other day, and Sundays are almost completely sold out. So you can go to memorialoperahouse.com to get your ticket information, and it should be right on the scroll, just clicking on Matilda, and then you'll have all the dates. Adults are $23, seniors, students, and military are $21. And then we are also paperless, so that means once you push that, it goes right to your email. And then when you come in for the date of your show, you just tell them your first and last name, and they got your ticket right there.
Well, we'd like to thank you for being an Art in the Air Spotlight, Matilda the Musical, Memorial Opera House, February 11th through the 27th. And you can find information at memorialoperahouse.com. That was Mike Glorioso, Andy Glorioso, the director and choreographer for that show. Thank you so much for being on Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thank you
for having us.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. And you just heard, by the way, Allegro, Duo Sonata in D Major by Yaclar. And we'd like to welcome to Art on the Air. He's enjoys a reputation among adventurous American violinists, spans a wide variety of musical styles and genre, expanding into prolific artistic entrepreneurial endeavors as a performer. He's been honored widely all over. We'd like to welcome to Art on the Air, Nick Orpovich.
Fantastic, Nick Orpovich.
Oh, that's so sweet, and thank you for having me. Thank you.
Obviously, Esther knows you, but we want our audience to learn about you and even myself, even though I research your bio and everything like that. So I always ask the first question is how you got from where you were to where you are, like where you grew up, where you went to school, your studies and things like that. Tell us all about everything we want to know about Nick, but we're afraid to ask.
It's a long story, but I think kind of interesting. I started playing the violin when I was 8 or 9 years old, and I was a lucky boy that had an orchestra program in the public schools. And this was in the town of Steubenville, Ohio. And that's where I started. Had they not had an orchestra program, I wouldn't be doing violin. I am pretty much 100% sure.
You might have been doing trumpet or something.
So, Nick, when you're introduced to the orchestra, how do you choose violin?
Well, I can only tell you how I chose violin.
Well, that's what I meant. How did you choose the violin?
Well, we had a very hardworking orchestra director that came around to the classrooms to recruit to see if anybody might be interested. And in that time, I didn't have any interest in the violin. I wanted to play rock guitar because I wanted to be like Jimi Hendrix. And so I thought, well, that thing kind of looks like a guitar. And what I'll do, I'll just, you know, start on that. And then in a few weeks, I'll switch over to guitar. That's how my brilliant 9-year-old mind worked. And so as I got into it, in a couple weeks, I completely forgot about guitar. And I kind of decided then that I'd like to do this forever. And so far, that's what's been going on. Now, I had very supportive parents. When they saw that I had kind of an ability or a talent towards violin, my parents, who were working class, they went out full force to support my love. They got me excellent private teachers, and I was able to do it. Had my parents thought it was, you know, kind of silly to do this, I wouldn't be here today.
Beautiful.
So what further studies outside of like public education? And I see you didn't study viola because I know there's a lot of viola jokes out there, but which I'll tell you like off air. But anyway, so moving on, like from school, how did you decide to go into like music as a career?
Right. Well, by the time I was in high school, it was pretty well set that I wanted to try to become a professional musician. And the standard way of doing it, you know, you go to college and you pursue a music degree. And so I did. And I went to Duquesne University and Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh. I then eventually ended up in Chicago at DePaul University because they had an excellent violin teacher with whom I wanted to study. And I have been in the Midwest area ever since then. I stayed in Chicago for 12 years, taking auditions, working freelance, and then ended up, I met my wife, Sunny. I know Esther, you know Sunny very well.
And, yeah.
We bought a home here in Michigan City because she was working in the public schools at the time, and that's how I ended up here.
So tell us a little bit more. You ended up in Michigan City, and you've played around the country and the world. So tell us a little about some of that, some of the things
traveling.
That you've done, traveling, what you've done, where you performed.
Well, let's see. Very early on, I had a great opportunity to go to Aberdeen, Scotland, to take part in an international arts festival and a competition. And that was for orchestral musicians as soloists. I was quite fortunate at the time. Now, this was way back around 1990, and I was able to bring in the bronze medal in the Aberdeen International Competition, and was very proud of that. After that, that's when I came back to Chicago and studied for 2 years to get my master's degree. I then started taking auditions in area orchestras. Pretty soon after that, I won the position of principal second violin with the South Bend Symphony. I was still living in Chicago, and it's not unusual, actually, for South Bend Symphony musicians to live in Chicago, Indianapolis, travel a long way to get there. It's a good orchestra, and it's an excellent job. Also played with the string quartet and the string quintet with that group. And playing about 30 children's concerts every year, and then adding on all the symphonic concerts every year with the South Bend Symphony. That was my main group. In that time, I also have been professor of violin at Valparaiso University, taught violin at Andrews University, and I have a pretty good private studio right now. Right now, I'm the orchestra director at Culver Military Academy, as well as staying with the South Bend Symphony. When I moved to Michigan City, Sonny and I kind of just talked a bit. And with some friends that I had at the summer Hot Springs Music Festival, we were all faculty there. We were kind of thinking of really starting our own festival. And we wanted, you know, a place, you know, that really would be a good home for a chamber music festival specifically. And we thought about Michigan City. It's on the lake, has some lovely properties. So we looked around for good places that might be welcome to perform. And that's when we started this Michigan City Chamber Music Festival. And that's what keeps me busy mostly in Michigan City. We're very proud of it. I know Esther's aware of it. And it'll be happening again this August.
Wow. Yeah, it is actually the most, you have lived like five lifetimes already with the amount of work and accomplishment that you had. And then to bring the chamber orchestra, this like truly world-class experience to Michigan City and offer it free to the community. I just can't even, you should just be having like awards and just accolades tremendously for this. And I also wanted to say that you and Sonny are just like a true partnership, not only life partners, but in every sort of way. And for you to do this together is so beautiful. So how did you choose the church to host this?
Well, you know, it's a very interesting, and anybody out there who's interested in starting a music festival, there's lots of things to consider. You know? First of all, you know, when were we going to do this? What time of year? You know, here in Michigan City, we're in that, we see all four seasons. So we were going to do it in the summer. Number one, we needed a nice venue that had air conditioning. We couldn't choke our audience members, you know, and as you know, that goes, that's very important. At that time, we also needed a good piano. There just is no possibility to play good chamber music for a long time if you don't have a good piano at that point. So that narrowed it down. Okay, venues with air conditioning, venues with a good piano. We needed to have a venue that had, that was very accessible to those with disabilities, our senior audience members. You know, they needed to be able to get into the church and out of the church safely and comfortably. And then what was the other thing? There was another very important thing. You know, we wanted it to be acoustically, you know, good. That was going to be, we were going to take what we could get, of course, but that was an important thing. So after everything, First Presbyterian Church was friendly to us, and they thought, okay, we'll give this a try. Now, early on in the beginning, we also had a couple concerts at the Barker Mansion. We quickly outgrew the Barker Mansion as far as size. You know, it just was not big enough. Yeah, of course, it's a lovely location, but
not as accessible as the church.
For sure. And the only way to really keep our audience comfortable, you know, and have enough seats would be outside. We really couldn't risk that in direct sunlight with fine instruments and with our audience members, too. So we don't do outdoor concerts. That's how we kind of got to the First Presbyterian Church. And we've been there. That's been pretty much our home. This year, we're starting looking at some other venues. Some concerts we have coming up are actually going to be at St. Mary's Catholic Church in town. In August, we'll be back at First Presbyterian, but it's good to, St. Mary's community has been really interested in having concerts there. So we're going to give it a try.
I think that's really good to vary it. You might get a bigger audience too with a change in venue.
It could happen, yeah.
So Nick, how do you come up with the themes every year? Because they're always so interesting.
Well, thank you. Sometimes it's very easy and sometimes it's not very easy. I'll just start off to, you know, in 2020 COVID, that was Beethoven's 250th birthday. That fell in my lap, right? Music festival, and Beethoven has a 250th birthday. It's got to be centered around Ludwig von Beethoven, you know? So all the activities we did that year were basically around Beethoven. Now, it's not always that way. And a lot of times I talk with the people I call the charter members of our chamber music festival, the other great musicians that live around the country. we'll just pick their brains. It's like, what are you dying to play? What are you itching to play? You know, and so we'll take a few very, very big works and I'll kind of construct it from there. Is there a good, you know, theme here? And there always is. You know, we've had one that was about the natural world, and there was a lot of pieces that had, you know, ties to the environment and just to nature in general. You know, it was a great one. This year, our theme, and I purposely thought of this one, is music and healing. After such a long time of us being indoors and, you know, fighting COVID and running from COVID, and it's not just, you know, a physical ailment. You know, we all have these emotional ailments now after, you know, fighting this pandemic. So music and healing, that was kind of a natural, you know, just to bring this up. And it's a difficult program to make work. You know, we have a number of great composers, the greatest who ever lived, who wrote pieces to heal themselves. And they were just so positive that this music was so powerful that it would heal them physically and emotionally, spiritually. And it never has healing power all by itself. You know, music just doesn't have that. It can be a part of your process of recovery. There's no question about that. But true healing is more than just music. We were going to play a lot of music that has shown, you know, some pretty strengthful aspects in healing. For instance, Alzheimer's patients, you know, there's been a lot of very interesting research done. And I think in a way people don't think sometimes. I mean, when a Parkinson's, Alzheimer's patient hears music from when they were younger, a lot of times people see, you know, some synapses kind of reconnecting. They remember things. But it's interesting. There's some pieces out there, and we're going to perform one of them this summer, where the mathematics of the notes, of the chords, and they're very strange just for pleasant listening. But when these patients hear these notes put together, it's really astounding how it affects their synapses. And it wasn't written for that purpose, but it does happen to take on that power.
That's so interesting.
I know.
I know there's a composer, Stephen Halpern, who is sort of the pioneer of coming up with music that for specific healing. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's come up with these tones that are supposed to engage in the healing process.
So Nick, tell us about some of the people on your resume. You have quite a few people that are well known that you performed with, at least in the classical world. Tell us about some of those experiences, some of the orchestras you've done been with and such.
Yeah, what it's like to be a visiting musician with some of these orchestras.
Yes.
Well, it's, you know, one of the great pleasures, you know, to perform, to prepare, to rehearse with, you know, other great musicians. You know, I know I have my good friend Rachel Barton Pine, you know, who lives in Chicago. I've worked very closely with her, is a concert violinist. I've played chamber music with her several times. And she's the greater the players you play with, you know, the more you expect from yourself. It just seems to be that way. I always practice, you know, every day, you know, I'm always preparing, but, you know, you really want to have that kind of stellar goal. You know, I've been lucky, fortunate, I just have to put it that way, to have played with some very luminary names in classical music, you know, Yo-Yo Ma, Itzhak Perlman, as they are soloists, and I was in the orchestra accompanying them. Others, Andre Watts, I think James Galway was there, right? And it's hard to even, different conductors, like Daniel Barenboim, who conducted the Chicago Symphony, Lauren Mazel, who conducted everywhere, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Vienna. So if you have a question specifically, any of them, I mean, it's...
Well, I also see that Sir George Solti was on your list, too. With the Chicago Symphony.
That's right. That was with the when I was with the Chicago Civic Orchestra. And that was a wonderful experience. Yeah. You know, he was quite advanced in age, but so much energy still. It was wonderful.
Have you played when they've been doing recordings? So have you been on any?
Not with those groups. No, no, I haven't. I have some recordings with the Hot Springs Festival with Rudolf Hocken, our violist in the festival. Haven't recorded with any of those artists.
Do you record the chamber orchestra at all for your own archives?
Not professionally yet. For archival purposes, yes, we do.
Good.
Surprisingly, even with music this old and stuff, there's a number of legal issues that just cost money.
So what is your personal practice? How do you set aside time in your schedule to practice? I mean, do you need a certain scenario or do you have a set time where this is what I'm doing?
I wish it could be that easy. I have to set a schedule every day whenever I have time to practice. Like after this interview, I have some hours to go practice and that's what I'm going to do. And I have a concert coming up this weekend where I'm soloist and I have to practice, I have to get this done. And so I'd like to try to get 4 hours a day, as I always have. And a lot of times it just doesn't happen. You take whatever you can get. The best way to practice, if it can be done, is to kind of break it up. You don't want to just grind it out for hours and hours and hours. If you can do 1 or 2 hours at one point in the day, go do something else, take care of your, go to work or whatever, come back, do a couple more hours, do something else, come back later, try and do a couple more hours. That's the best way to really practice to get it done. We always have that luxury, but.
Well, and also to say probably physically healthy. I know a lot of violinists, have certain physical problems, and I think breaking it up like that probably keeps those at bay a little bit.
I agree.
What's your advice to young people that want to become involved in, orchestra and maybe especially string instruments, but, obviously practice is how you get to Carnegie Hall is the old joke, but seriously, what would be your advice to them if they truly want to make music either as a full-time career or even avocational?
Well, early on, we're not going to be able to tell if you're going to have a full-time career. But what I'm going to say is just your daily band preparation in school or orchestra preparation or choir practice in school is not nearly enough. You will have to take private lessons with a private teacher one-on-one every week. Have a good private lesson with that private teacher and then practice every day, not rehearse. Practice. That means on your own at home, and you'll practice what you do in your private lessons. That must happen for you to have a shot at playing music at a high level later on. And if you do that, you'll get into a routine of practice and you'll be able to continue your practicing. If you don't like practicing, don't feel bad about it. You fall into excellent company. Most people hate practicing. Practicing is not joy. Practicing is drudgery. It's one of those things, with all the snow, we had to shovel our walks, right? That was not joy, but we had to do it. The same thing with practice. I remember Itzhak Perlman talking about how he loathed practicing when he was a child, but his parents made him do it. And I have quite a few colleagues that hated to practice and then learned how to love it later on, so that it wasn't drudgery so much, something that you have to do. We all wish we could do this without practicing, but we must, and we must have a good private teacher. You won't be able to do it just in class.
To say, I've heard from a lot of your private students how wonderful you are as an instructor.
Well, thank you.
Are you continuing to, for this next chamber festival, is the children's choir or our children's programming still going to be part of it?
Children's programming will be part of it, absolutely. And we're going to expand that. We always have 3 children's concerts during the week of August. We are right now currently in scheduling 3 more children's concerts before the festival starts, spread out through the summer. So people need, if we're going to be putting those up on our website pretty soon, and people can take a look at that and also get it in the local media. So absolutely, very important.
And so your core group, were they friends initially, Nick, or because you've got a solid core of chamber musicians?
We've been very blessed there. It was myself, Wesley Baldwin, his wife, Melissa, soprano, and Rudolph Hawken. And we all met at Hot Springs, Arkansas, as faculty members. And we were up late one night and we were talking about, you know, what about, why don't we start our own festival? And we ended up doing that. Our pianist, Robert Aller, came with Rudolf Hocken. They had been, they were childhood friends, and they came to town to do a recital over 20 years ago. And Robert's just an amazing genius. And so he's been our primary pianist and has been ever since.
That's a terrific group.
Real quick, and we just got about a minute and a half left. What's your one of your favorite composers to play?
There's so many. I really love playing Brahms. I really love playing Beethoven, and we've done a lot of those on the festival. Brahms is very, well, we, as we say, string friendly. You need a really rich tone, you know, beautiful sound. So I think that's why a lot of we string players love Brahms.
I know one thing about Beethoven, when he, especially in his later symphonies, is how aggressively he used strings, where before they were not quite that aggressive sound in that and everything. You know, got about a minute left here. So yeah. Want to tell us how we can find out about you. I know you have some YouTube videos up where we can hear things, and actually we'll hear some of your music as we play out here. But tell us about websites, contact information, and all that, Nick.
I'll recommend folks, YouTube is a great place to go to hear some of our we did 50 presentations through COVID, and that, just look up Michigan City Chamber Music Festival on YouTube, Michigan City Chamber Music Festival. Another place to see where our upcoming concerts are is our festival website, MCCMF, think of Michigan City Chamber Music Festival, mccmf.org. And that's a very good resource.
Well, we appreciate you coming on Art of the Air, and we'll be playing out with the Largo of Duo Sonata in D Major, Nick Orovich. Thank you so much for being on Art of the Air and sharing your life story and your musical journey.
Thank you so much, Nick.
Thank you for having me, guys. Have a wonderful day.
You as well.
Listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Someone who you might be heard on the air here on WVLP, but also is involved with Project Neighbors and does a whole wide variety of things. And the song you just heard as we were introing is A Walk in the Dunes, and he's put out a new album called Couch Music. And we'll be discussing the musical sides of our guests. Please welcome to Art in the Air, Paul Schreiner. Welcome there, Paul.
Welcome, Paul. It's a pleasure.
Thank you both for having me.
That first song is very much like a meander through the woods, so it was really aptly named.
And meander through the woods would have been a good title also. That is one of the challenges of someone who creates instrumental music, is it's tough to come up with names.
Oh, completely.
Same thing with naming my pieces of fine art photography. And well, Paul, tell us first of all, for our audience, and I would be surprised if our WVLP listeners don't know, but a little bit about your whole bio and background. I always like to say how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us briefly about that story, and then we'll talk a little bit about some of your music.
Well, I was born in South Bend, Indiana, attended Valparaiso University, spent a year as a VISTA volunteer. After graduation, didn't really have much direction with a liberal arts degree. Got a graduate degree from Indiana University, taught school for 10 years, public school. Actually, we spent some time in the same area, Larry, because I taught at Munster High School.
Okay.
Decided I didn't want to spend the rest of my life teaching. The necessities of having four children and living on a teacher's income forced me during the summer to learn some trade skills. So by the time I left teaching, I became an entrepreneur and began doing construction work, building room additions, and then eventually whole houses for people. Somewhere along that path, I opened a place called Front Porch Music, which was a music store in Valparaiso, Indiana. Had been a lifelong amateur musician that connected me to that music store entrepreneurial sort of thing. 7 years ago, I retired from my construction company and became the executive director of a local not-for-profit called Project Neighbors, which happens to be the license holder for the FCC license for WVLP. And Project Neighbors continues to provide housing for folks who probably couldn't afford to live in Valparaiso. So I keep my hands dirty much of the time, and much of the time I do other things.
So, Paul, I have a question about your early childhood experiences. Were your parents, or were they involved in community service and volunteering? And how, you know, I'm kind of like, what led you into this life of community service?
Well, that's an interesting question. I don't think either of my parents were directly, demonstrably involved to the extent that I am, for sure. Although I think their heart was in it, and I think that got to my heart. But the significant individual was a fellow by the name of Walt Reiner, who I met in 1991. Although I had known of him prior to that, and I could spend a lot of time talking about him.
That's when you opened Front Porch Music, too. So did that all sort of happen at the same time?
That was a real breakout year for me, for reasons that probably would take another 20 minutes to explain. but Walt was a man who showed me a path that I think I was desirous of being on most of my life. I just didn't know how to do it. So he was the inspiration. He was the founder of the organization. He's gone now. He had been a football coach at Valparaiso University and then an activist in many, many ways. And by the time I met him, he was in his mid-60s. But he was going strong. And we met on a roof, putting shingles on a house that I volunteered to help him on. And he said, "You want to talk about the big picture?" And I won't go into that, but suffice it to say, it was a 15-year conversation.
So tell us a little bit about your music in general. You yourself describe what they call picker, but describe how music has been, you know, part of your life and everything, and then how this developed into, well, producing this music and the CD, where there are 30 selections on there.
Right, and I want to add to that question, which is with your family life, with the four children, how would you integrate that? Were you playing like as a family?
You know, I have one child who was a rather successful rock and roller for 20 years. And if you listen to my music, you know he didn't get that directly from me. Although there was always music in our house, the house where I grew up with, where we raised four children. If I go back to my own childhood, my mom was a fan of music. I was a constant nonstop whistler. So one of my parents said at some point, "We need to get this kid playing some instrument." And that was in the late 1950s when the Kingston Trio were popular, and I latched onto them like a leech. And they were the inspiration for a love affair with contemporary folk music for the balance of my life. So I took guitar lessons, wasn't particularly talented, but stuck with it. I've now played for, you know, I started when I was 10 or 12 years old. Again, never highly disciplined, didn't take a lot of lessons, essentially taught myself to play, but was always loved the sound, the texture of the instrument. And it's been my pal and my companion and sort of my go-to activity when I need to calm down and relax and just soothe myself a bit.
Well, we talked about some of your music, and we heard, of course, in the opening of the show. But let's start with the first piece I like is Night Sky. Is there anything you'd like to talk about that before we play it?
You know, when you're sitting on your couch, which was the name of the album, you do what guitarists refer to as I can't think of the term right now. You just put your hands on the strings and you see what comes out. That piece of music was a real surprise, as most of them are, and it turned out to be one of my wife's favorites. Whenever she likes a piece of music, it will survive. If I survive, I'll play it enough so that I guarantee to remember it. Because she'll ask me to play it. She continues to say that that's one of her favorites.
Well, let's take a listen to Night Sky from the Couch Music CD. Was Night Sky from the Couch Music CD, and that's available at the Neighbors Organization CD, but you can also go to our website, click on Paul's picture, and it'll take you right to the information about getting the CD. So
it's such pleasant music, Paul. I mean, really, it's very nice to listen to.
Yes, all 30 cuts. When I brought the CD home, partially in preparation for the show, but also put my $20 in the kitty there. But anyway, it was just very relaxing. It's one of those things that you could just enjoy and relax the whole time.
I should add that I'm selling the CDs for $20 a piece because there's 30 songs on it. So you get the value, but all of the proceeds go to supporting either WVLP or Project Neighbors.
Right.
I did not want to get into the music business.
Okay. And you actually covered the entire production cost. So it's not just the proceeds. The entire amount of that $20 goes to those organizations. So, well, our next song is called Grieving. And tell us a little about the setup for that, and we'll take a listen to Grieving.
Grieving comes from my need to express melancholy. And I don't know why that is, but I find that to be a very satisfying mood to set with the guitar. And I find that the guitar, the acoustic guitar, I never play an electric guitar. It's always an acoustic guitar. I find that its voice is very, very soothing if it's played in a certain way. I mean, you can play it lots and lots and lots of ways, but I tend to land on melancholy frequently, and I think that song very much fits that.
Well, let's take a listen to Grieving on the Couch Music CD. On the Couch Music CD, Paul Schreiner's music that we have here on Art on the Air.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
Paul, you said that I think the music is very relaxing, but and you don't really want to be a professional musician, but do you ever perform anywhere?
I have performed for years in a number of different contexts. Normally with a couple other people, usually some people who are capable of singing. And we've done contemporary folk music. We've done covers of contemporary folk music. My wife is a natural harmonizer. She can listen to a melody once or twice and conjure up the harmony. And she has a good voice. I learned fairly early in life that while I have a great desire to open my mouth and sing at the top of my lungs, it's probably smart to not do that.
So the next song is that we're going to play is Nicole's song. Why is it named Nicole's song? Who is this Nicole?
Nicole Lee is a friend who I met at church. She would occasionally substitute for the organist, and whenever she was doing that, she'd say, "Let's do something together." So inevitably, I would pull out one of my pieces because I don't read music. She's a classically trained, formerly trained, very disciplined pianist who I think at age 8 was practicing 8 hours a day. Wow. She's employed by Valparaiso University to teach piano. We got to be friends. We had a little fun musically together, and she liked that piece of music, and we played it several times, just kind of spontaneously at social events. So always desperate for a title that had some meaning beyond just an arbitrary choice of words, I named it Nicole's Song. And when I told her that, she asked if she could record it with me. And so that's how that came about.
It's a very sweet, wistful song is how I felt about it. It was just very tinkling, and yeah, I enjoyed it.
Well, let's take a listen to that. But before we'll let that play us out, our guest today is Paul Schreiner. You can hear him on WVLP with ABC at Noon and House Rap, among other things. So listen to Nicole's Song here as we fade out. Paul, thank you so much for being on Art on the Air. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul.
Once again, that was Nicole's Song. That's from the Couch Music CD from Paul Schreiner. You can get the CD by visiting the WVLP studio, or you can go online to Project Neighbors and search for the link there. You can also find the link on our website, breck.com/AOTA. Click on Paul's picture, and it'll take you to an order. So that was Paul Schreiner's Couch Music CD. We hope you enjoyed it here on Art on the Air. listening to Art in the Air, and we'd like to thank our guests this week on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art in the Air is heard every Friday at 11 a.m. and rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP. Art in the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP Station Manager, and Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Our theme music is by Billy Foster, with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. Underwriters for Art in the Air, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments, and Mary LeVan, Arts Patron. Art in the Air is always looking for financial support. We'd like to thank our current supporters. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, Esther and I especially would invite you to become an underwriter of this program in particular. We have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA. You can find out support information there. So don't just be an Art on the Air listener. Become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you're able to do so we continue to bring you this great content and this great local programming. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. And you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.